Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, I'm Ruth. It's great to have you here with us on A Quiet Life. This is episode 30 of A Quiet Life. I have made it to episode 30. And as I record this, it is Wednesday, 15th of May, 2019. And I'm just so excited to be here. I have 30 episodes under my belt, which was a real milestone that I wanted to achieve, and I have. And now I think I should probably try for 50. What do you think? Anyway, today's guest is Kath, and Kath talks a lot about community. In fact, she didn't intend, I think, to talk about community, but it just oozes out of her. It's what she's all about. So her community here in Tasmania that she works with, that she hangs out with, the little church that she goes to in Snug, and the community that she reaches out to that is around Uluru, on the other side of Uluru, she said, and that she meets with regularly every year. So it was really good to hear her talk about that. It was fun because she mentioned a whole lot of Indigenous words. I had to get back to her afterwards and say, right, tell me how to spell this and how to spell that. And because I don't know, she does, which was good. And I want to get it right. I really do want to be respectful there. So that was great to talk to her about community. And we also talk about her little boy, Tom. And Tom was such a lovely little boy. He's with Jesus now, but he was so gorgeous. He used to have the most amazing smile that would just lift your spirits and connect with you and take you in. And I remember him at church when the music was playing, he'd go up the front in his wheelchair, he'd have a little flag and he'd be waving that flag for all he was worth. It was fantastic. So yeah, Tom, we miss you, and it was good to remember him in this interview today. This week in my life, well, I should have said this last week, but I forgot, but this last week on the 7th of May was the first anniversary of the launch of my book, My Year of Saying No. So it's been out for a year, and that's a bit of a milestone too, and that's pretty cool. If you haven't read it, it's a bit of a collection of blog posts plus a little bit more, a bit of a memoir, a bit of a self-help, I don't know what it is, about saying no, about when to say no and when to say yes, and how to sort of organize your life so that you're doing, you know, what you should be doing and not doing a whole lot of things that you maybe shouldn't be doing. And it talks about also the fact that sometimes the things we should be doing aren't necessarily the things that we enjoy. So all sorts of lessons like that that I had to learn that I decided to put together into a book. So yes, if you want to read it, you can find it on my website, ruthamos.com.au, or it's at Koorong, or it's on Amazon. It's available as an ebook and as a paperback book. And one of the things I keep thinking is I'd really love to record it and make it an audiobook as well, but I just simply cannot squeeze that in at the moment. So yeah, if someone out there wants to transcribe these podcast interviews for me, then I'll record Saying No as an audiobook. Deal? We'll see what happens. So that's that was last week. This week, well, I'm doing a lot, so sometimes I think I need to read my own book again, but my life is full, but it's full of it's full of such good things. So I've spent a bit of this week doing things out the front of people, and sometimes, I don't know, it leaves me feeling a little bit overexposed, even though I really enjoy it. So that's been gorgeous. But part of me really wants to become invisible again. I like doing a podcast, actually, because I'm here in my own little room chatting to you, and I'm not sort of out the front. It takes a lot of energy to be out the front of a group of people, but it doesn't take quite so much to do a podcast, interestingly enough. So I think it's because I can listen back to what I say and fix it if I need to fix it, maybe. So yeah, there's been a few out the front things. I'm excited. There's been a couple of writing groups. So that's been my community this week. It's been either a writing community, getting together and talking about all things writing, which if you're not a writer would probably bore you to tears, but we seem to manage to fill hours of conversation about, you know, developing characters and the arc of a book and how it should go together and what people should be named and, you know, all kinds of things. It's very interesting. Anyway, so I've had a fair bit of that this week, which has been great. And I have been prioritizing writing my own novel again, which is really a good thing. So it's been a couple of weeks now. I think I've written just about every day. And when I do that, other people might have different experiences, but when I do that, I find that the feel of the book comes to me more naturally, and the whole thing starts to come together like an organic being, like a plant. You know, it suddenly takes shape, takes form, and I know what the book's going to be like. And I'm starting to just edge around that feeling now, so I'm very excited. Once I've put this podcast up, I'll have another hack at it and see what I can pull out today. So that's very cool. So yes, that's been my community this week. Of course, the week coming up, we have to vote, and I just encourage you to think about what our God thinks is important, and try and vote in that direction for the same priorities that God has: the poor and the orphan and the widow and justice and the stranger, all those things that God finds important, says he finds important in his word. So yeah, we will see how that all goes. On Saturday though, as well as voting, so we must remember to vote, but as well as voting, we're going to our friend's wedding, and that will just be really lovely. Ben and Liz, I wish you absolutely every blessing on your marriage. I'm excited to be going to the wedding. It's going to be really sweet. So yeah, that's pretty much it this week. Full and happy life. Hopefully not too full. Yeah, I hope that I have enough time to give to my community in what I'm doing as well, and to allow my community to give to me. Because it's always a two-way thing, isn't it? I hope that whatever you're doing, that you have enough time to listen to this podcast, and that you have, that you know that this is part of the community that surrounds you. It's a different kind of community, but I think it's still part of that community feel. Anyway, I'll stop rambling on. Let's listen to what Kath has to say about community, and I'll catch you on the flip side. Today's guest is Kathy Dolliver, and Kathy and I used to go to church together, and then she decided to go down and support a church plant down in Snug, which I think is awesome. Mm. And Kath and Chris have four boys, one of whom lives in heaven with Jesus right now. So we're going to talk a bit about Tom today, and we're also going to talk a bit about the Uluru visit that Kath's just come back from through the cold of Tasmania. But welcome, you're very welcome, Kath.
Thanks.
How did you become a Christian?
I grew up in this tiny little town in Victoria called Cobram, and my mum was a really strong Christian, and so I was the baby of six kids. Grew up going to church every Sunday morning, 9:15 every week, and she was one of those wonderful Christians that was just really active in her faith. So she'd be praying for people all the time. I'd always walk into her room and she was reading the Bible and had her little prayer notes out and was dropping off a meal to someone down the corner and that kind of stuff. So I always grew up with faith being part of my life. And then when I was obviously confirmed and all that through the Uniting Church when I was like 14 or something. And then when I went to uni in Geelong, I really questioned, like, how do I do this faith thing, you know, actively kind of thing. And that's when I think my faith really, it was really a conscious decision to follow Christ and what does that mean in my everyday life, which then brought about a whole stack of other questions of, well, how do I do social work and be a Christian and all this kind of stuff. So just opened a whole nother door and changed life in the future because of that. Yeah.
Did you have somebody that helped you through all those questions at that time?
Yeah, well, when I was at uni, I lived with an older Christian couple, and they were lovely just to bounce kind of stuff off. But I was going to a Christian kind of uni support kind of group, and one of my good friends there had just kind of said, if you had a fusion, my mum's part of fusion, how about I get you some data? And we just threw around ideas all the time. So kind of was like, what does that mean? And how does that look? And that kind of stuff. So it was wonderful having someone kind of in the same kind of stage of life, but then having other mature Christians around me to kind of ask questions. And even returning home to Cobram, I'd go home for holidays or whatever, and I'd go catch up with a few of my mum's friends that were like mentors for me, I guess, and kind of say to them, well, there's this other kind of church that are trying to tell me this, what does that mean, you know, and that kind of stuff. So I could quiz them and get an accurate picture of, well, what does this Bible literally mean, amongst it all.
So was there a specific time, and it really sounds like you got to uni and you suddenly went, this faith has to be my own faith, and but was there a specific day or whatever where you went, from this time on, here I am as a Christian? Or
I think that kind of middle of that first year there was really that time where, and I was baptized at that time, and it was really a conscious decision to go, okay, just take away all that yucky stuff that, you know, that umming and ahhing, I guess, in life, and from now on I'm just gonna I'm gonna wait for you. Yeah.
And have you been involved with Fusion from that time onwards?
Well I then went to Poatina to study with Fusion and became qualified in youth work, and then was sent on a placement to Hobart, where I married Chris. He was working for Fusion and then kind of never returned to the mainland after that. Well, only for visits then. Yeah. And so we got married and had our own family of footboys. So, so that kind of changed life again, and I guess was not in my picture at all of that's what it would be. But then have kind of... Fusion, I guess, open doors to how to make your faith active in life, I guess. And although I'm back in a different form of youth work, I guess, now, I still help out with Fusion, and I'm still part of the community, I guess, there too.
Yeah.
I'm just not working full-time for them anymore.
So we've got several things that I know that everybody wants to follow, but it's all right. They're all on my list of questions. So don't panic, people. We'll get to all of it. But I think because we started with Fusion, and you've just been to Uluru with Fusion. Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about that? Why do you go? What do you achieve there?
So I'm part of a base camp team that head up to Uluru every year. And there's a few different elements in that group. So 19 years ago, Fusion began a journey of taking busloads of young people that they were already currently working with, networks that youth workers already had contact through, whether it be through accommodation services, refuge centres, youth centres, all these different fields in their own state, and then travelling them all to Uluru, to the heart of the country, in order to have this journey and process along the way to work out what life has meant for Indigenous people in Australia, but also not only the boundaries that have been crossed for them, but also what kind of boundaries do we personally cross along our journey of life, not necessarily just the nations that we cross over as we journey through Indigenous communities through our state and throughout the nation, but also how do we step over the boundaries with our mates and our next door neighbours, and how do we have positive relationships with those people. And so part of my work up there is to head up the schools work in schools in both Yalara and Mutajulu. So we base ourselves out of Yalara, which is more of the tourist town of out on the other side of Uluru, and then we travel out to on the other side of Uluru is the Mutajulu community, which is an Indigenous kind of closed community, but we have an open, wonderful free door to be able to go in and work out there. Awesome. So I not only work in the schools out there, but also help to support the night patrol crew, which support young, primary kind of aged young people, so that they can get a healthy dinner, get to bed on time, and then are able to get to school to continue learning in their own journey the following day. So it's really a crew that work from Sunday to Thursday, every night before you need to go to school, to help make school achievable for the young people out there. So it's wonderful to, although we go there for once a year, might be there for 2 to 4 weeks, this crew are there all year round, and so it's wonderful to be able to turn up and support and just network with. We've got so many kind of friends and family there now, and so whenever I either fly in or drive in, it feels like I'm coming home in a sense, because there's all these friendly faces and warm hugs from everyone, and kids screaming as soon as they see our little 12-seater bus turn up. They come out of nowhere like, oh, you're back again, you know, and that kind of thing. So they just love the time that we spend out there, and we love it too. It's just, I feel like I'm always learning there, and I think it's such a picturesque place, and you just feel like God's beauty is kind of all around you. And Indigenous people often talk about when you go to somewhere, you need to stop and wait for your soul to catch up to you. And I think it's just a great picture of being able to, often in life here, we are struggling from trying to timetable our life, you know, from this to that, to work, to running the kids around, to whatever. And then all of a sudden up there, you just stop and wait for your soul to catch up to you. And you have time with God just to be able to be present and to work out, where to from here, God, you know, and what are you calling me to now? And I think that's such a journey for me and for those that are around us. And then all these busloads of young people from all the different centres turn up on a one particular weekend all together. So you have about 150 young people turn up. And as base camp, we host that weekend so that they don't just become like tourists, but they learn about the land and the Indigenous people there, and about life there, about art and language and hospitality, and about whether you should climb the rock, and you know, things like that. And so they get that teaching from the Anu. They learn about the Tjukurpa, which is about the law of the land, and they get to learn the language of the Pinjarra. Yeah, it's wonderful. I always enjoy it.
So I guess the fact that you're going there year after year is one of the things that changes it from, you know, voluntourism to actually being a helpful part of the community there.
Yeah, I know when I was talking to one of the wonderful ladies up there, Dorothea, and she said, oh, some groups will just come in, do their little stint, get some photos with the kids and that kind of stuff, and then duck away and never return. And they really want people to come and share with them, but to not just share, go away, never return, but to keep coming back and developing those relationships. And that's a relationship of trust too, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that you're not just this random person, but you become family and are warmed to their community.
So you've got that long-term effect in the community there. Have you seen long-term effects on the kids that have come up and visited?
Yeah, for sure. There's been so many. Obviously, it's happening once a year for currently 19 years. Next year will be the 20th year. And each of the young people that go on the journey all have these, they have their own life struggles that they're bringing with them, whether it be family breakdown or just trying to work themselves out, or social anxieties or depression. And each of these kids, often it's a struggle just to get themselves on the bus. And I know we took a bunch from Tasmania this year, and a couple of the local guys here from southern Tassie, it was a struggle. And even the day before, they didn't really know if they were going to step foot on the bus, because it was such a such anxiousness with not knowing what the goal is, kind of where to from here, kind of thing. And so to even get on the bus is a big journey. And then when we see them arrive at Yalara, their faces are lit up because all of a sudden they've become part of community where people care about them and love them and are willing to ask the questions of how they're really traveling and where to from here, how can we support you better. And so they have this huge big weekend up there, and then the whole trip back, their group leaders are kind of asking, well, where to from here, how can we literally support you, can we go back into your school and meet with the principal with you and work out what steps are next best put into place, or do you want us to help meet with family, can we put some stuff in place to make sure life is a bit simpler for you at home, or do you need to come into our accommodation program? And we've seen all these kids over the years take these dramatic life changes where some kids have kind of said, wow, I was at the point of wanting my life to end. Mm. And all of a sudden now I can see there's purpose. And even one of the boys from down south this year just kind of said, oh, I now know why you wanted me to come. I didn't think there was anything for me in life. And now I know there's a way forward, kind of thing.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, if it can change just one life each year, yeah. I kind of think, oh, wow, what a journey, you know. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said you're sort of in youth work now. What do you do for a job?
Yeah, I'm currently a chaplain in Snug Primary School, 2 days a week, and I've been in that position for 8 years. Currently one of the longest serving chaplains in the one school in Tasmania, and so it's such a wonderful experience to be in there. It's a school where all four children have gone through that school. Two are still there. And so it's wonderful to see, to be on the grounds where they're going to school, helping to make a difference there, but also just to be part of the community. We live in that community. As you said earlier, we've become part of a church plant down there. And we see that as a way of being able to reach out to the community and put our faith straight into action, be able to invite the person from school along to the activity at church or whatever, and want to be able to serve that community. So I help to organise food hampers and things that can help to support day-to-day living, but then also to be able to be part of Launch Into Learning and things like that, so that I can help to see the progression for not only little people and bigger people, but also for their parents, and help to find networks for them to keep sane in this parenting and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I also help in learning support another 2 days in another school in the high school area in that way. So helping to support kids with additional needs. And I also help to write grants for other organisations too.
You're busy.
Yeah, a full life.
So, I mean, because you're working in a state school, but as a chaplain, there's all sorts of boundaries around there about not being able to share your faith. So how do you balance being such a faith-filled person with such a strong mission with not being able to say anything?
Yeah, it's not the same as, I guess, RE teaching that used to be years ago where you'd be going into the school and teaching about God straight up kind of thing. But I kind of find, I always think of that saying about making life an action so that it's seen rather than just necessarily heard, that people can experience your faith. And I think that makes a difference when people can say, geez, there's something different about that person. You know, they're always giving me a smile, always willing to help out and that kind of stuff. And so I think getting beside people, often in their times of struggle or need, then opens the door to them later on coming back to you, whether it be outside of school or something, and say, what's the go? Like, why are you like this? And how do I get some of that? You know, like, and so there's been people from school that have now joined our church, but that's not necessarily come from having those full-on conversations in a school kind of thing. They might ask me in school, do you go to church, you know, or ask me questions like that, which is fine to answer things that people ask you, you know. But it's just about balancing respect for different different cultures, different communities, and those around you as you're going about your day-to-day work.
Fantastic. And it really feels, I mean, really getting the vibe from you about community and how important community is, because I know that there's just such a loneliness epidemic around the place, but it seems like, you know, you're all about building community, whether it's through Fusion or whether it's through your work in the schools and the church, to just build that community around.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, how many people now don't necessarily know their next door neighbour kind of thing? So how do you network and be open so that you know those around you and really know their world? We talk about that gnosko, kind of that kind of moment when something clicks for you, kind
Never
of thing.
Heard of that before. Yeah.
And so being able to really know someone else's world, and that's that line of empathy rather than sympathy, where you would not only just walk alongside someone but enter into their world along the way. So I have the opportunity to actually listen to their world and that kind of thing. And I think community is so important, because things like parenting and that kind of stuff can be so lonely, especially when they're younger or something like that. So you need others around you to kind of go, oh, yeah, that's normal, you know. Or I have a great relationship with the child health nurse down at Snug, who actually operates at a Snug primary school. And so we're able to throw ideas back and forward and get networks for other people that might need it, and just make sure that everyone around us is supported as best possible, that you're set up the best to be able to achieve life, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you need that kind of support around you. You need a mate down the road to, you know, pawn your kids off to, so that you can go for a walk or whatever it might be, you know, to be able to survive those day-to-day kind of things along the way, I guess.
Could not agree more. So let's talk about Tom. So Tom was born with quite a severe disability.
So Tom would be 16 now, so quite some time ago when he entered the world. And and he was born with abnormal high muscle tone and a partial palate cleft, so a little hole in the back of the roof of his mouth. And so he naturally was kind of seeing a pediatrician just for checkups, to check where to from here, you know, and we're seeing an OT and physio just to try and relax part of those muscles and that kind of stuff. And he'd had quite a few tests to try work out what is this thing. And then when he was three, they the pediatrician was actually away, so he's just in a registrar. And they thought they heard a hole in his heart, and so sent us for further tests. And within a week or so, we were in Melbourne, to which they found it wasn't actually a hole in the heart. It was a restrictive cardiomyopathy. So along with all the other little things that went about Tom's world that made him short in stature and have this abnormal high muscle tone and a few other little bits and pieces along the way, they then realised that he had this heart condition, whether he had that before or who knows. But from there, then we juggled what did that mean amongst all of that too. And I think we're fortunate that God kind of just gave us bit by bit rather than throwing it all at us all at once. So we'd gone to Melbourne. They did an exploratory surgery to try work out whether it was a possibility for him to go on the heart transplant list. What would it mean? And I remember the cardiologist just saying, this is like the second worst heart I've ever seen. I can't believe he's walking around. And he just said, look, I think you've probably got 6 months to 2 years with Tom. So at that point, we really made this conscious decision about having quality of life with Tom and for him not just to be flat on his back in a hospital bed, but for us to do whatever we could to extend that time that we had with him, but also for it to be a great life for him to have too, to be able to have mates around him and to be able to go on trips away and those kind of things while juggling blood tests and all that kind of stuff amongst it all.
So I guess for you at that point, community was really important there as well.
Yeah, for sure. And across all of Tom's journey, community was really important. Tom passed away when he was seven. And, you know, he's in a better place now. And he knew all along. He was like, can we just stop all these needles and can I just go to be with God? You know, what is with this? So he was, you know, he was okay with where he was going next kind of thing. But we needed that added support around us to help support us in the process too. So whether it be we had one lady from church that used to just randomly come and pick our washing up from the front door and then drop it back the next day already done.
Wonderful.
She knew that we were just going through so many loads because there was so many accidents and vomiting and everything, particularly towards the end. We palliatively cared for Tom at home. And so it meant then there was all this additional washing and things like that, and she knew that that was a practical sense that she could put in place. And we had other friends that would just come and turn up and stack the dishwasher and things like that, which were really important because at the time that Tom passed away, I was actually 36 weeks pregnant with our youngest boy, Eli. And so, you know, that added a whole nother dimension too. But along that journey, you needed people to be able to bounce off ideas or to go, what do you think? Do you think we should go do this? You know, and at the time of Tom passing away, my mother was actually passing away too. They both died within 1 week of each other, both being palliatively cared for. And there was that sense of, I really wanted to duck home to say goodbye to Mum, but I didn't want to leave my child here knowing that he might pass while I was gone. So there was that real juggle of trying to, how could I work this, you know, amongst it all and be with everyone that needed me at the time, kind of thing.
You could have been torn in a million pieces.
Yeah.
Because you're looking juggle. After two other small boys at the same time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Trying to kind of make life possibly a little bit normal for the two of them amongst all the ins and outs of life, I guess, you know, so trying to make sure that I still got to do pickup for Ben at school and things like that while still being able to get on the floor and play cards with Jay. So trying to juggle all that while caring for a child.
I wasn't great at getting on the floor and playing cards with anyone when I was 36 weeks pregnant. That's crazy.
Yeah. Those are the times, hey?
Did you manage to see your mum?
Yes, I did. Tom had a really good day one day. So I jumped on a plane. My brother picked me up from Melbourne and we drove to see Mum. She'd been put in hospital, which actually made the trip closer. So we drove the 1.5 hours, ducked in, seen her, and got back, got on the plane, and then I got home and Tom had a horrible day the next day. And so it was just meant to be that God gave me that time to be able to spend with her and to say goodbye and just rest next to her and spend that time, which was lovely.
That's really full on.
yeah. And that's what life was like, this fleeting moments amongst life at that time, coming and going and trying to appreciate those little moments along the way too.
Yeah. And how have you come to terms with Tom passing? I mean, I know he was just so full of faith and he was absolutely gorgeous, cheerful boy and everybody loved him. So.
Yeah.
But, as you say, it's been, nearly 10 years now.
Yeah. I think that I think different markers impact in your timeline of, I was describing to a friend the other day, that is almost like a before and after, you know, before your child gets really sick or, you know, after they pass away, something like that. And then all of a sudden there becomes these markers, the first Easter that they're gone, the first Christmas, the first anniversary of them passing away, you know, the 13th birthday, the 16th birthday. Those kind of things really strike you more than other days. And I think particularly in the first year, little moments would just get me all the time, whether it was I really struggled to dish up the right amount of plates of food because I was always dishing up an extra one all the time and then thinking, what am I doing, you know? And so little things like that affect the day-to-day, and then you think, oh no, I've just got to pick myself up myself up and deal with everything that life throws at me, kind of thing. And fortunately, I think we had the blessing of other children. And so it meant someone's going to drag me out of bed even if I feel like I don't want to get out of bed or I want to curl up in a ball and that kind of stuff. And yes, there's moments of, you know, crying in the shower or, you know, that kind of stuff. But it's not that it gets easier along the way, but I guess your coping mechanisms develop along the way, kind of thing. Yeah. You find ways to be able to go your day to day without feeling teary all the time or without everything jumping out at you. And I guess appreciating the moment, so something might strike you that you think, oh, Tom used to say that or Tom used to do that, but then would become a smile rather than a tear necessarily. Mm. So finding ways for life to continue, and you're trying to work out ways, I guess, too, that how did Tom impact so that I can use those skills and those gifts to others around me, rather than it being a life that's gone that I can no longer learn from. Well, I can continue to learn from my life experience being a mother of this awesome child.
Julie, who I talked to last week,
yeah,
as this goes out.
Yeah.
But it was yesterday as I'm recording this, yeah. So I can remember really well. But she said, you know, asking how can Jesus use this
makes,
instead of why did this happen to me, but just how can Jesus use this?
Yeah. And I think people often say things like, oh, well, how can you believe in a God when he took away your son, you know? But you tend to think, well, in that moment, how could I do life without God, you know, because what a struggle it would be if he wasn't there strengthening me. Because then what is there to wake up for in the morning? Or how do you do life without the extra shoulder to rest on? Or and sometimes you need carrying amongst all of that, and that's what God will do. God will let you rest on him when you need it, and it's not that he's throwing all these bad things at you, but actually that these bad things are happening and he will be there for you amongst it.
Yeah.
You know, that he will strengthen you when you need strength and give you hope when you need hope, and give you the day-to-day skills that you'll need when you need it most. You know, often people often say when I'm praying, I always pray for wisdom in the moments when I need it most, because I think there's that struggle of that unknowing sometimes. Oh, what do I do in this moment, God? I'm happy to do whatever you want me to do, but what do you want me to do? And so that's where I guess I'm asking for that wisdom in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Is there a time that you feel particularly close to God?
I think in times of struggle, I feel closer to God.
Mm.
I think it's even that moment of, like, for years, Chris and I were both full-time volunteers for Fusion. And so budget was very, very tight. You didn't know when any money would come in. And so we're living off whatever. I remember times having to return things to the supermarket with my receipt to get the money to pay the whatever, you know, like, so there was such a struggle. And I think in those moments when you're living day to day, you're more dependent on God and closer to him. You're praying more and you're looking for opportunities and looking for opportunities to share the gospel, looking for opportunities to hear what he's saying to you amongst it all. And I think that's when you feel closer to God, when you're not surviving off your own stuff, your own money that you have built up, your own, you know, all these structures that you put around yourself to make yourself feel comfortable, I guess, amongst it all. And so I think I feel closer to God when struggles come my way, you know, because that's when I'm asking, please be near me, God. Yeah. You know, please shelter me and give me all I need in this moment.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. All that I need to cope through this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What's the one thing about God or Christianity you wish everybody knew?
Ah, gee, I guess I wish everyone knew God loved them.
Mm.
Yeah. And that he is there in those moments when you need him most, when you're feeling lonely or anxious or depressed or all that stuff that life throws at you. Gee, I wish everyone knew that there was some person there waiting for them. You know, that he's there to protect them and look after them in the times when no one else is there.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Wasn't that just so lovely? So much wisdom from so many experiences in serving the Lord. Thank you so much, Kath, for sharing so deeply with us. Next week we have another Catherine. Catherine is from Gambia, so she has an excellent West African accent that I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to, and we'll insight into parts of a different culture. It was fascinating. I look forward to it. Thank you so much, everyone, for your comments on Facebook and on my website. I love to hear from you. Please keep it up. It's great. I want to thank Catherine Joy from Joy Music House, especially for the music for this podcast. And just to invite you to remember to share this with somebody if you think it can help them out, or just to share, because these stories are so interesting and I think they need to be heard. Or give us a rating or a review on iTunes. That would be fantastic. See you next week. Bye.